Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's brand new Season 2. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf at Adam. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to brand new on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the podcast. My name is Chris Paulette. I'm an editor here at HowStuffWorks. And with me, as always, is my lovely and talented co-host, senior writer Jonathan Strickland.
Howdy.
And it's a good thing that you're listening to the podcast on this format because it's not copy protected.
Right. Yeah. You can transfer this as many times as you like.
And we encourage you to share this with everyone. Go ahead and have everyone hand-delivered copy of our podcast.
Sure. Freely distributed.
Yes, absolutely. But that's not the case for all audio files or video files that you'll find in digital format.
That's true. Actually, yeah, many different kinds of files, you know, video games, software, all of these can come with a certain restriction, which in the biz is the is known as digital rights management, or DRM.
That's good. I actually thought that was DRM.
Yeah. I think some of the opponents to DRM would agree. And yeah. There are a lot. DRM is one of those hot button issues on the internet where people get really, really fired up about it.
That's true. Well, speaking as a musician myself, I see positives and negatives to it. I wouldn't want necessarily somebody to buy a copy of a CD that my band has put out, rip it and distribute it freely for everybody to have. And then suddenly, there are no copies of the CD being sold because it's freely available online. I see a value to DRM, but there are some particularly restrictive DRMs out there. And those especially are the ones that raise the ire of the general public, I think.
Right. So let's kind of lay the groundwork here and kind of explain what all this is. So on the side of the people producing the content that has the DRM in it, what their point of view is that they've got this product they're offering for sale, and they don't want it pirated and then distributed throughout the internet to just about anyone who has a connection. Because it, you know, obviously it hurts their bottom line. It hurts their profits. They don't make any money off of that. And so that's where you hear about, companies saying that piracy is this huge problem on the internet. Now that's debatable. People argue, if the argument is that we lose this amount of money because of piracy, the counter argument is the people who pirated that stuff, were they really going to buy it? And if they weren't going to buy it, did you really lose money? Because if no one was going to buy that product in the first place, then you're right back where you started from before the piracy happened. Now, that doesn't excuse piracy by any means. I mean, but it is one of those counter arguments. So DRM is one of the approaches to try and head off piracy. It's usually within a digital file. It's usually some code that requires a key that exists on a server somewhere for you to be able to transfer that file from one location to another, like to your, from your computer to your iPod, for example, or other MP3 player, or even a computer to another computer. Or if you have to upgrade your computer, let's say that you go from XP to Vista for some reason, you might need to be able to activate that key again. Otherwise, you won't be able to access that file.
Yeah, for example, chances are you're probably listening to this podcast through the iTunes Store and Apple. Apple has what it calls Fair Play, which if you buy a CD, or I guess if you buy an album from iTunes and you want to play it on your computer, you know, that computer is authorized to do that. You can authorize up to 5 computers to play that file. And you can, you know, any iPod that is registered at that computer can do that. And you can burn it to a CD. And as long as you're listening to it through iTunes, through a registered computer, you can listen to it as much as you want to. Now, if you're like me and you have 5 computers registered, if I wanted to, you know, pop in a backup CD of iTunes files that I had on my work computer, I would be stuck because I've already got 5 computers registered. Actually, one of them is an old hard drive that is now out of my computer, so I really should deauthorize all of those again.
Sure.
But, you know, essentially, they say, yeah, you can make copies, you can make backups of this file, because we know that you can only play this on a computer that has been authorized by us to do that. And that actually can present some problems if the service goes belly up.
Yes, and that's happened several times in this year, as being 2008, just in case people from the far-off distant future are listening to our podcast. But yes, several times this year we've had services halt, services that offered DRM'd music. They stopped. And these aren't necessarily small services. These are usually big names, MSN. Microsoft, yeah. Networks, that's a pretty big name.
I've heard of them.
Yahoo Music.
Yeah. I heard of them too.
Walmart Music. Yeah. Now, we should say that all of these services offer DRM-free music now, but that's where the problem is. They used to offer DRM'd music, but that gets so much bad press in the blogosphere. It gets so much resistance, and there are so many potential problems that a lot of these companies said, you know what, we're going to move to a DRM-free business model, which sounds great, except that now you have a problem. What do you do with all the DRM music that's already out there that people have purchased before the switch? And the one solution is that you just run the servers that have the key, the key that needs to be activated if you want to port your music from one machine to another. You could just run those forever. It's not really economically feasible to do that, though. I mean, you could use those machines for something else if you stop doing that. But if you stop doing that, that means that you have locked down those files on the computers of the people who purchased that music. And they purchased it legally. You know, they didn't pirate this.
Nope.
They didn't steal it.
Nope.
So you're kind of punishing your customers in a way.
Yeah, yeah. Another alternative to that, but all these services gave their users some notice that
right.
They were going to shut it down.
Sometimes
some more
a
than
month
others.
Or two. Yeah, Walmart, I think, was like 2 weeks.
Something like that.
Yeah.
And Yahoo was a little tighter. MSN was a little more out in front.
And they actually pushed back their date on switching off the servers because they got such a response from people who had purchased files. They said, you know what? You're right. We're going to hold off a little bit longer than we had planned to give you more time.
Yeah. But basically the solution that I'd read about most frequently was suggesting that people make an audio CD of these tracks and then re-rip them back to MP3 files.
Right.
Or whatever format you happen to use. Problem with that is it degrades the audio quality. So, you know, it's passing it through a couple filters. Essentially, it basically removes compression information.
And more than that,
information. Let's
think of it this way. More than that, what's one of the big things about digital files that are so attractive? There's no physical format that you have to deal with.
Sure.
You don't have to store something. You don't have to. It kind of defeats the purpose for the digital file in the first place. If you just wanted a physical format that you could have and then you could, you know, rip music off of it whenever you wanted, you'd go out and buy the CD. You wouldn't go buy the digital files.
True.
So now what they're saying is that you have to go out, buy blank CDs, put a CD in there, burn your files, your music to that CD, and then put it in another computer, which does strip it of the DRM. And also some of the quality of the file, as Chris mentioned. But it also means that you've got another CD sitting around. Now, if you're using a rewritable one, you can use the same CD over and over again. But other than that, it's really, you know, it's not a very green method to deal with this problem.
No, not at all.
You're generating more waste. Chris is laughing because he can see that I'm about to explode. This is one of those things that gets me riled up. No, this is one of those issues that does get me riled up. I agree with people like Veronica Belmont. She's a podcaster as well and a host of several different tech related shows. Her argument was that why don't they offer a certificate so that you could purchase the new DRM-free version of whatever files you bought using that certificate, and then you don't have to worry about it. You can just delete the old one if you want to, and you would have a DRM-free version. I think that's a great gesture. Now, granted, it does create a headache for the providers.
True.
Because you have to figure out how do you say, all right, well, they can only get the files that they previously purchased. Because, what if you use that certificate to buy all new files, and so essentially they just gave away a whole bunch of product for free.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in business, that's usually considered a bad move, giving anything away for free. So, yeah, there's some issues there, but I think it shows a much better approach to customer service than just saying, hey, go out and buy some blank CDs and, you know, you're on your own. And after October 9th, that's it. I mean,
well, speaking of customer service, that actually takes me in a different direction, because one of the other things that Jonathan and I talked about for this podcast was the long anticipated and hotly hyped, well, that's an interesting way to put it, game from Electronic Arts called Spore.
Yes.
Everyone was talking about it. And I was one of these people that's very excited to see this game. Well, when it came out, it turned out that Electronic Arts had put in a DRM system very similar to Apple's FairPlay, in which you could install the game on three computers.
Right.
But only three computers. And if you wanted to install it on another computer, you had to call the company to have them give you an additional code. This made a lot of people unhappy.
Right. Extremely unhappy, vocally unhappy.
To the point where they actually started going on to wares sites and downloading broken copies of the game, cracked copies of the game, so that they could play it without this digital rights management embedded in the game.
Not only that, but they would go on to Amazon and then negatively review the game.
Oh, yeah.
Not on the merits of the game itself, which many people say is a fun game,
yeah,
that it's enjoyable. And
it's gotten good play reviews.
Yeah, it's gotten good play reviews. But a lot of if you went on to Amazon, I think they've managed to purge most of these by now. But the average vote was coming out to being like 1.5 stars. And you're thinking, well, this game was getting such great reviews elsewhere. Why is Amazon, why is it tanking on Amazon? It's because Amazon allows average people who just register on the site to come in and rank anything, rate any product. And there was a concentrated effort by people who opposed this DRM to come in and just completely squish the score down to nothing based on the DRM, not on the game. So you had all these different reviews that just kind of slammed EA for the whole DRM strategy. So it made some news just based on that as well.
Sure.
I mean,
and to EA's credit, they did go and bump it up to 5 computers that you could install it on. You know, speaking from my personal viewpoint on this, I see where people are coming from, that it's the principle behind it that, you know, hey, I bought this game. I should be, you know, if I've got 10 computers in my basement and I want to have people come over and play Spore, you know, I want to be able to do that. I want to be able to put it on these computers or you know, what happens if my computer dies and I put it on another computer?
Yeah, 10 years from now, I want to still be able to play this game, but I'm definitely going to have a new computer by then and so many different iterations of the operating system that I'll run out of the DRM limits.
Right. I just think that, you know, people are being a little hard on EA. It just seems to me that, you know, if they're willing to give you another code, if you could say, well, you know, my hard drive tanked, I need to get another code for this. You know, I do think they probably, you know, 3 machines was probably too few. You know, but by the time that a lot of people's computers die, Spore 2 is going to be out.
Right. Well,
you know, so
yeah, but I mean,
and to go on Amazon and rate the game poorly,
that was
it just seems like it's a little too far.
Yeah,
you know?
That was maybe definitely a little childish.
Yeah.
But aren't there games that are there any old games that you still play occasionally? Or, I mean, assuming that you can find an emulator or something that allows you to play them.
Right, right. Well, a lot of those are on Mac Classic for me, since I'm a Mac user at home.
Well,
so.
Okay. So for the normal user
right.
who doesn't use a Mac.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I've got a Mac too. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I like to joke that I'm an Apple hater. But yeah, I own a PC as well. There are games from 10 years ago that I play.
Oh, sure.
And
yeah.
If they had had these restrictions, I wouldn't be able to do that. And I think another issue here is not just that, you know, EA stepped over the line necessarily. It's that it's one of those issues that gamers and music lovers have been dealing with for so long. It was kind of like the straw that broke the camel's back in a way. Think about some of the other big DRM issues besides the fact, I mean, we had – with Microsoft going down and Yahoo going down and Walmart going down with their DRM servers, there was this indication that, hey, if something happens, will I be able to move this game again?
Right.
Well, I mean, what if the EA somehow has a collapse or they decide to turn off their servers?
Sure,
if it's web-based, then that means my game is stuck on this computer and I will never be able to get it off there.
Right.
That's a legitimate concern. And
yeah.
And think also, we should also point out that while we're talking about digital files and digital distribution mainly in this podcast, that's not the only place you find DRM.
Oh, no.
DRM is on physical products as well, like DVDs and CDs. Sony had a huge brouhaha back in 2005 about this.
Rootkit.
Yes. They installed on a music CD, you could put a music CD into your computer and it would immediately start to incorporate these files that Sony had put onto the CD that were meant to prevent people from copying music left and right willy-nilly.
Virus.
But, yes. But what they really were – it was a virus. It was pretty much a computer virus.
Yeah.
And it would attach
to – Not intentionally,
but that's what it was.
Yeah.
It would attach to your computer's rootkit, and theoretically that could have a nice little backdoor for Trojan programs down the line.
Yeah, and it hung people's computers up too. It wasn't, you know, completely benign.
No, it and there was some spyware type of functionality in it as well, where the computer was literally monitoring your every move on that machine and sending reports back. I mean, there have been enough really, really bad DRM stories for people to really kind of get upset, kind of the way I do,
you know, sure.
Where we start to get riled up, so that when something like this happens, you just, especially with Spore, I mean, you got the combination of not just the DRM, which was a little probably over the top.
Maybe
a little draconian. I wouldn't even go that far. I'm like you. You know, I understand their need to protect their investment.
Sure, yeah.
But you're talking about a game that had been hyped for so long, and people have been waiting for it for 2 years, essentially.
Yeah.
And it kept getting pushed back. Expectations were so high. Emotions were already at the tipping point, right? Mm-hmm. And this DRM thing where you're like, I've been waiting for this game for 2 years, and now you're telling me that it has all these restrictions. People just blew their tops.
Sure.
I mean,
that's understandable.
Yeah. And then when you have these other stories about the servers going down, people are still upset. It's not hard to understand why people get riled up about this.
Now, there's just got to be a way for a company to say, you know, I made this. I want to make some money off of my hard work. And there has to be a middle ground in between that and the customer saying, look, you know, if you guys go out of business, I still want to be able to play this game or listen to this music or watch this video.
Right.
And so there's got to be some middle ground in which both sides can agree to do this.
There are companies out there, the ones we had already mentioned that have dropped the DRM. There are companies out there that are now offering these files without DRM, and I don't think they're suddenly seeing a huge drop in profits. I mean, Amazon was going DRM free pretty much for their music before anyone else was. In fact, that's why I love Amazon Music. I have iTunes on my computer too, but I love Amazon Music because I know that I'm not going to get a DRM'd file when I buy that music file.
Yeah.
And I mean, so the business model works. I think it's pretty much clear that there are going to be pirates who are going to go out there and they're going to figure out ways around this DRM. I mean, that's the problem, is that these solutions are really punishing the legitimate customer more than the pirates.
That's true.
And I don't think the pirates are really causing that much economic stress for these companies, or at least not as much as they would have you believe.
Well, ultimately, I think it's going to end up being a system in which the middleman just gets cut out.
Yeah.
You're going to have your game studio or your artist or your author. You know, people like Neil Gaiman and Cory Doctorow have been releasing some of their books in, you know, PDF format so that people read them. And they're finding that people are reading the PDF and then going out and buying copies of the book.
Right.
And I think ultimately, when you get down to it, people want to do the right thing.
Right.
You know, there's always somebody. But, you know, I think people, if you could say, hey, what if you paid me $5 for this CD and you just go ahead and enter your credit card number, you can have the MP3 files, go ahead and tell your friends, you know, what you think of the record. I think people would rather pay the artist less money and get the thing without any DRM for it, because I think that's going to breed loyalty among customers, and they're going to keep coming back and going, you know, hey, I like your book. Hey, I like your game. You know, here's $20 for it, and
right.
Go right to the source and go ahead and pay them less money.
It's kind of like the old shareware.
Yeah.
Kind of approach.
Of course, and, that's a bummer for the publishers.
Right. Yeah. Well, but we see that. We're seeing that with like artists like Trent Reznor.
Sure.
Has done that. Radiohead did that. Jonathan Colton.
Yeah.
Jonathan Colton built his career on offering his music for free and then saying, if you like it, you know, you can buy the tunes here. Or you can just download them and freely distribute them and alter them. As long as you're not trying to make money off of it, I'm fine with it. And he's quite well. Yeah. I think.
There you go.
So yeah, there are ways around this without relying on the dangers of DRM. And that, I think that's the main thing, is that if it weren't for the fact that it impacts your ability to use this product that you have purchased, people wouldn't be so up in arms about it. But because it actually can affect your experience while you're using what you have paid good money to use, I mean, that's where tempers are going to flare up, like mine.
Yeah.
I guess that was a good conversation / rant.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I guess we'll wrap that up about DRM, and we will talk to you again soon.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com.
brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.